Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Opinion. Texas View. 27,000 rejected ballots is unacceptable. The point. Easy to vote and hard to cheat? Apparently not. Does your vote count? Probably. Maybe. If you got the paperwork right. And if it didn't count this time, we'll make sure it does next time. That seems to be the message to many Texas voters, Republicans and Democrats alike, after more than 27,000 mail-in ballots were rejected in 120 counties for the March 1st primary, according to reporting by the Associated Press. Though many of those rejections may yet be remedied, early returns put the rejection rate among male voters at about 17%, dramatically higher than in the 2020 general election, when fewer than 1% of mail-in ballots were rejected statewide, according to the AP. To put it simply, that's unacceptable. Updates to Texas election law passed last year were supposed to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. That's what we kept hearing from Republican supporters of the reforms. But apparently, the new voter ID provision for mail-in ballots has failed in at least half that charge. There are 27,000 reasons to think it's now harder to vote in Texas, particularly for seniors and disabled Texans. One frustrated voter, Pamiel Gaskin, 75, of Houston, told the AP, "It took me 3 tries and 28 days, but I got my ballot and I voted." We supported some of the voting reforms, and we are generally in favor of common sense measures to verify voter identity and to scrap outdated practices like signature matching. But a plan is only as good as its execution. And the execution here flopped. Most of the rejected ballots appear to be the result of confusion over procedure. Do I put my ID number on the ballot application or the envelope carrying the actual ballot? Do I use my driver's license number or Social Security number? Voters were unsure because the changes were poorly executed, with too many confusing messages and no adequate statewide education campaign to prepare voters. Meanwhile, some county elections administrators feared that voter outreach efforts would get them in trouble under the new law. They pointed to a new provision banning those officials from soliciting mail ballots from people who haven't requested them. Elections officials, including the Texas Secretary of State John Scott, say the rejection rate should drop in future elections once the changes have had time to shake out. But this will sort itself out isn't very reassuring to voters like Gaskin. Voting is sacrosanct. Americans get understandably upset when they get the feeling that someone is erecting barriers to exercising that right. Texas already has problems with low turnout, especially in primary elections. This news will only reinforce the creeping suspicion among voters that their vote doesn't count. Scott and his office must work with county election officials to fix this mess right away. Dallas Morning News. Obituaries for March 16th. Ronald Ron Amonette. Ronald Ron Amonette, also known as Ammo, 80, of Odessa, died Sunday, March 13th in Midland. He was born September 15th, 1941 in Flomont, Texas, to Clyde and Juanita Amonette. He is survived by his wife, Linda, a pet, Peanut, sons, Brent Amonette of Leander, and Jimmy Walsh and wife, April of Kyle, daughters, Teresa Simpkins and husband, Kevin of Odessa, and Tina Walsh of Austin, 5 grandchildren, sisters Jerry Williams and husband Gary of La Mesa, and Diane Napper and husband Terry of Kerrville, and numerous nieces and nephews. Ron was preceded in death by his son Blake Amonette, his parents, and a brother, Johnny Amonette. At his request, there will be no memorial service. Aurora Bersosa Larrea. Aurora Bersosa Larrea passed from this life Saturday, March 12th, at Parks Senior Living. She was born February 24th, 1931, in Balmoray, to the late Eleuterio and Matiana Bersosa. Aurora was married to Faustino P. Larrea for 69 years prior to his death in 2017. She is preceded in death by her husband, her daughter Adela Larrea Vasquez, a grandson Nathan Larrea Davis, her parents Eleuterio Bersosa and Matiana Hernandez Bersosa, sisters Elvira Fuentes, Ophelia Fuentes, Feliciana China Hill, and brothers Celso Chino Bersosa, Moises Bersosa, Eleuterio Bersosa Jr., Alfredo Bersosa, Benjamin Bersosa. Surviving her are her daughter Marianne Larrea McCoy and husband Bill, sons Faustino B. Larrea Jr., Danny Larrea Norton and wife Sabra, son-in-law Gilbert Vasquez, a nephew Celso Fuentes, sister Luz Hernandez, 4 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. Viewing will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 18th at the recitation of with the recitation of the Rosary to follow at 7 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian Burial will be held Saturday, March 19th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church at 11 a.m. with Father Frank Chavez officiating. Burial will follow the funeral mass at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Donations may be made in memory of Aurora Bersosa Larrea to West Texas Gift of Hope, Post Office Box 871, Odessa 79760. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Teresa Tarin Aguirre. Teresa Tarin Aguirre, 71, of Odessa, died Monday, March 7th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, March 18th at Odessa Funeral Home. Visitation will be Thursday, March 17th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery of Midland. James Russell Balch. James Russell Balch, 67, of Andrews, died Sunday, March 13th. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. March 18th at Second Baptist Church. Burial will follow at the Andrews North Cemetery with Kevin Covington officiating. Arrangements are by McNett Funeral Home of Andrews. Antonio Tony Castaneda. Antonio Tony Castaneda, 48, died Monday, March 14th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jimmy Reed Everett. Jimmy Reed Everett, 91, of Eastland, died Monday, March 14th. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. March 18th at Edwards Funeral Home of Eastland. Annette Marie McNabb. Annette Marie McNabb, 70, of Odessa, died Monday, March 14th. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. March 17th at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will immediately follow at American Heritage Cemetery in Midland. John Hudson Price. John Hudson Price, 62, of Woburn, Massachusetts, died Monday, August 16th. A memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. March 18th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, and burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Denise Ann Smith. Denise Ann Smith, 66, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 8th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, March 17th at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Dorothy Olene Blythe Spann. Dorothy Olene Blythe Spann, 87, of Odessa, died Friday, March 11th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
This is Jane, reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Wednesday, March 16th. Certified nurses lead by example. Midland Memorial Hospital proudly recognizes its board-certified nurses on Certified Nurses Day, which is March 19th. A ceremony will be held for all certified nurses on Friday in the O'Shaughnessy Garden. It will include a roll call and pinning. Certified Nurses Day is an annual day of recognition for and by healthcare leaders dedicated to nursing professionalism, excellence, recognition, and service. Every March 19th, employers, certification boards, education facilities, and healthcare providers celebrate and publicly acknowledge nurses who earn and maintain the highest credentials in their specialty. Certified Nurses Day honors nurses worldwide who contribute to better patient outcomes through national board certification in their specialty. Professional board certification is a voluntary designation earned by nurses who demonstrate an advanced level of competency, skill, and knowledge in their specialty field. The first specialty certification in nursing was established in the United States in 1945. As of today, there are more than 190 specialty certification options for nurses. Nursing certification is significant for many reasons. Having certified nurses within organizations has been shown to improve the quality of patient care. Increased numbers of board-certified nurses also result in lower infection rates, surgical complications, pressure ulcers, falls, and mortality. Certification demonstrates value to healthcare stakeholders by decreasing nursing turnover and vacancy rates, increased job satisfaction, and increased patient satisfaction scores. Nurses report a feeling of personal accomplishment and personal satisfaction with achieving their certification, rating higher in self-confidence, competence, and empowerment. Obtaining certification is not an easy task. It takes time to study and schedule the tests, with many certifications requiring years of professional practice before becoming eligible. There are costs associated with exam fees, travel, certification preparation, and professional membership, in addition to maintaining your license. Lastly, there is the anxiety and fear of failure that comes with taking a board exam. These exams are designed to be challenging and exceed the fundamental exam used to obtain a registered nursing license. MMH is dedicated to fostering certification and professional development. Our goal continues to remove the barriers to certification and advanced education. MMH sponsors study groups and review classes on campus to help staff members make time to study for certification. Our certified nurses also offer peer-based coaching and mentorship to those working toward certification. MMH also provides financial incentives to certified nurses through our professional development ladder and reimbursement upon taking the exam, not just for successful completion. Along with exam costs, we help by reducing the fear of failure by offering some exams free of charge to employees with one retake opportunity. Examples of these programs include the Medical Surgical Nursing Certification Board Fail-Safe Certification Program. I want to take this opportunity to commend all the nurses who have dedicated themselves to improving their knowledge and skill through certification. Thank you for your commitment to your patients, colleagues, and your professional development. Your credentials represent your focus, determination, and devotion to give your patients the best nurse that you can be. This article is written by Dr. Kit Bredemus at Midland Memorial Hospital. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram on March 16th. Midland Healthcare celebrates Healthcare HR Week. Teams of specialized roles lead healthcare for Greater Midland. March 14th is Healthcare HR Week. This week, we are celebrating human resource professionals at Midland Health and healthcare organizations across the nation for their important role across the continuum of care. Human resources has always played a vital role in the healthcare setting, but the last couple of years has drastically changed our day-to-day operations and flipped our world upside down as we encountered the challenges of working through a pandemic. We solved issues by moving almost all hiring and orientation processes virtual. We implemented processes to allow some of our employees to work remotely, depending upon their role. We helped employees and managers through the complex state and federal rules around COVID pay, additional coverages mandated into our health plan, Family Medical Leave Act complexities, and more. During this special week, we wanted to spotlight Midland Health's human resource team and the specialized role we perform to help lead healthcare for Greater Midland. The talent acquisition team is composed of recruiting professionals with diverse backgrounds. This team has a combined 68 years of human resource experience. We are passionate about attracting and retaining top talent. Our roles encompass full-cycle recruiting involving every stage of the hiring process, from sourcing to screening, interviewing, to pay and offer, and new employee orientation and onboarding. We communicate to candidates and new employees our amazing culture and reputation, our vision and values, benefits and other advantages of working here. The benefits team designs and manages all benefit programs for our employees. This team has a combined 15 years of human resource experience. The benefit programs include medical, dental, vision, and other supplemental plans, life insurance programs, short and long-term disability programs, and 13 retirement plans. It takes 6 or more months every year to design the upcoming year's benefits program for our employees. Employees Relations Human Resource Information System Compensation. This team has a combined 81 years of human resource experience. This team is responsible for managing managers and employees to ensure their success. This includes policy development and overseeing processes required for all hospital accreditation. The employee relations aspect of our role includes coaching and performance improvement and investigation into matters that affect our productive work environment and culture. We have responsibility for the HRIS function, which is the system of record for all employee data and payroll. This includes personal contact information to compliance information, pay and position information, and so on. Every time there is a change in HR, it is entered into the HRIS system. We work closely with our payroll department in this role. Training, staff development. This team develops and facilitates leadership and management training. This team has a combined 33 years of human resource experience. This includes e-learning and classroom training to assist employees and leaders in developing new skills. The training team is building a comprehensive management and leadership training program that will include areas such as communication, employee relations, interviewing, performance management, policy procedure review, benefits, various technology, training opportunities, and diversity. This talented human resources team, along with their leaders not mentioned above, have a combined 266 years of human resource experience. We all work hard to serve our employees, patients, and visitors. It takes the entire organization to care for our community, and we take great pride in the fact that what we do is critical to leading healthcare for Greater Midland. We are blessed and grateful to be part of this amazing group of healthcare heroes.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Heath Roach. Prostate-related issues and fluids. Dear Dr. Roach, should a junior-senior male, age 75, be concerned about increasing urination, both at night with normal prostate-related issues, but also during the daytime? Does one have to compensate and drink more fluids? Is there a danger in not having enough fluids in the system? Answer. Most men in their 60s and older do notice that the urine flow is slower than before, and sometimes it becomes difficult to empty the bladder entirely. This leads to more frequent bathroom trips, but with somewhat lower volume. And as you say, it's most commonly due to enlarged prostate. The total amount of volume coming out stays the same and is equal to the amount of volume coming in, minus what is lost through sweat and other smaller losses. You do not need to increase your fluid intake. Treatment is to shrink the prostate, which may require medication or sometimes a surgical procedure. Very large amounts of urine suggest a separate cause. In diabetes, excess blood sugar carries water out of the body. Diabetes insipidus is most commonly caused by the loss of antidiuretic hormone and inability for the body to properly regulate sodium and water balance. These possibilities can be easily evaluated by your regular doctor. Finally, what seems like prostate problems can sometimes be a bladder issue. If prostate treatment isn't working, it might be time to see a urologist for further evaluation.
This is the Dear Abby column. Depth of partner's affection unspoken until it's too late. Dear Abby, my longtime boyfriend passed away after an extended illness, and I'd like to offer a suggestion to your readers I wish I had thought of before his passing. After the funeral, I was thinking about what a wonderful man he was, so I decided to compile a list of his good qualities. The list grew longer the more I thought about his many positive attributes. They were big and small things, but they all added up to why I loved him so much. I wish I'd had it framed and given it to him while he was healthy, or at least while he was still living. I know it would have meant the world to him. I hope my suggestion will be adopted by your readers. It could bring so much happiness to the person you love. Do it before it's too late. Signed, Loved So Much About Him. Dear Loved, please accept my sympathy for your loss. Death is particularly poignant if there are words left unsaid. I subscribe to your philosophy. That message is eloquently conveyed in a poem included in my Keepers booklet. A quick and easy read, Keepers is a collection of poems, essays, and letters readers have repeatedly asked me to reprint. Many subjects are covered, including children, parenting, animals, aging, death, forgiveness, and more. It can be ordered by sending your name and address, plus check or money order for $8 in U.S. funds, to Dear Abby Keepers Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Keepers makes an inexpensive gift for newlyweds, pet lovers, new parents, and anyone who is grieving or recovering from an illness. What follows is the poem I mentioned. The Time Is Now. Author unknown. If you are ever going to love me now, while I can know the sweet and tender feelings which from true affection flow. Love me now while I am living, Do not wait until I'm gone, and then have it chiseled in marble. Sweet words on ice-cold stone. If you have tender thoughts of me, please tell me now. If you wait until I am sleeping, never to awaken, there will be death between us, and I won't hear you then. So if you love me, even a little bit, let me know it while I am living, so I can treasure it. Dear Abby, if I'm with a close friend and she has a prominent hair on her face, should I say anything? I appreciate it when someone brings something like that to my attention. As a member of several women's clubs, I wouldn't want to be known as the hairy lady. Signed, Helpful in Virginia. Dear Helpful, of course you should say something. Privately. A true friend should not only tell her, but also share a pair of tweezers and a pocket mirror from your makeup bag with her. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.